this is Open Up and Bleed, K-Chung Radio. Wow, it really is Super Tuesday in here. It's extremely hot. Are you sweating? Is everybody sweating? Okay, no one is responding to me. I was obviously speaking to the people at home, all 1 million of our listeners. And this is a great show. It's March 1st, 2016. This is my audition to be on the Patriot Radio Network. So let's get this going. As usual, Open Up and Bleed here. We have a wonderful guest. Guest, will you announce yourself? Tell us who you are, what your name is, etc.
Yo, what up? It's Albert.
A little louder, a little bit more into the mic.
People call me Albie.
This is going to work a lot better if you don't look at your phone the whole time.
I was trying to get some source material.
No, it's your life and your opinion. Your collected opinions are the source material.
Yeah. It's funny.
What was your name again?
It's Albie. I was just thinking about when we first met.
A long time ago.
Kind of almost.
Almost in a land far, far away, even though it was still Los Angeles.
Echo Park. It was a very different Los Angeles, wasn't it?
Yeah. Do you like it when guys are like, oh, they really fucked up the Little Joy or the Gold Room or something? Oh, I remember when the people who used to live here were poor.
I have a lot of self-hate, and like I hate when guys are like that, and I'm often like that.
Yeah, I'm often like that too, and I also think it's quote-unquote whack. Right?
Yeah. There's this,
Soulsy Cutie.
Me
go hashtag deep. Have you ever been described as hashtag deep?
I was homies with a dude who would always say deep for like anything. Like we'd have a slice of pizza and it'd be a deep slice, but not like a Chicago style. He'd just be like, yo,
right,
that pizza was deep.
In terms of pizza, that's a confusing thing to say. Like I can imagine like 10,000 things you could say were deep and it'd be like, oh, abstractly
is,
functional
him. His name was right. Chuck, and he had this like weird
Bowl cut Chuck, we called him.
And he would always go in on shit. He was like, yo, I'm about to go in.
I remember that.
Deep. And so it made more sense that way, where things would be deep and he would be going in on something.
Is this someone that you were deeply friends with? You would often go in him around the time that we met? Was this like 6 years ago that you hung out with Bowl Cut Chuck?
This was like 2006. It was my senior year.
Oh my god, 10 years ago.
10 years ago. Can you
believe?
10 years ago.
You graduated high school 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Are you happy with what has happened with your wife since then?
I think so. I think there's a lot of like constant resetting, you know?
Right. Okay. Yeah.
That's the weird thing.
Stalked you from afar, even though we're friends and I see you out all the time and I never talk to you. But that's the point of this show, that we can talk like in a way that we don't really do in real life. And you have traveled a lot these last 10 years. Is that right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Where have you been at?
Well, I kind of went like I spent a lot of time in Asia, a lot of time in Europe. But yeah, just like sort of spending like
where in Asia?
Of time. Most recently, I was living in Tokyo.
Did you like that?
It was really nice. It was really cool.
Would you describe? Okay, this is this is like a spectrum. Okay, in the middle of the spectrum.
That's the thing about Tokyo. It's the entire spectrum.
No, but I'm going to get really specific here. And because, you know, you're of a certain age, I'm of a certain age, we sort of have the same sort of cultural reference points, more or less. Would you say your experience was more close to the movie called Enter the Void, or less close, your time in Tokyo? And there's no other reference point in this spectrum.
I was on Tinder a lot in Tokyo.
That hadn't been invented at the time of the film.
And one of the things that I would do in Tokyo.
How many
like
matches
watch...
did you get in Tokyo?
Well, the thing is, Tokyo is like really. It's like a massive city, but it's like really small.
I see.
Because there's like only a certain amount of people who like speak English.
Right. Who would be interested in.
Right. And so you match with those people.
Are they xenophobic there? Like.
I've never used like Tinder here really, or like I think I have, but
yeah,
like,
you have.
I have, but I've never like gone for it. You know what I mean? Like in Tokyo, I was like, definitely going for it
every night. A different match, a different crazy event.
Not every night. I mean, I met like you know people, and I would just hang out with them. So I stopped using it. But like,
what is?
But anyway, for sure, I would meet someone from Tinder, and we would meet up at like we would always meet up at the Hachiko dog at Shibuya Station.
That was your spot?
It's a statue. It's kind of everyone's spot. It's a statue of this dog called Hachiko. And Hachiko's a famous dog because he, like, would wait for his owner every day.
Huh. He was a real dog. He wasn't like a cartoon
dog. He was a real
dog
that would show up to Shibuya Station, and his owner would come home from work at Shibuya Station. And they would walk, and the dog would essentially walk the owner home.
Wow.
Then the owner dies, and then Hachiko just stayed waiting at Shibuya Station.
This was in the 50s, 60s?
I don't know.
This dog literally
is like the 40s or something.
This dog is a symbol of...
20s and 30s.
This dog is a symbol of a capitalist Japan.
Not sort of like,
let me
like
welcome
you. You know?
Nah, not really. It's like, go to work. Go to work. Do the miserable thing for this country. Make us strong. And then I'll be waiting to reward you with my lovely dog features.
That's one way.
Almost like a wife, says the peanut gallery.
That's one way to think about it, I guess.
Okay, so because this dog is so faithful and loving, that's where all the lovers meet.
That's where we would meet. So we would meet there, and then, like, just one of the things, you know, like, you put on, like, sort of a boring, long movie on the Tinder date once you go home, you know, and, like, it would
I believe in America they call that Netflix and the Chill.
Netflix and the Chill, and I think Enter the Void was, like, kind of an easy thing to watch.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Yo, Tokyo is crazy, right? And you would watch this movie. It was just, like, a nice way to, like, discuss, like, you know, drug use and, like...
Uh-huh.
Whatever.
Did you
just
use
like
drugs there?
Of Tokyo. I didn't really. I used one drug once. Or like there was some MDMA there. And
right.
There's some 2-TCB.
It's not as easy to find there.
It's very hard to find.
Very hard.
Very hard to find.
Did you make any sort of meaningful, quote-unquote, love connection in Tokyo?
I don't know if I.
Did
I
you get close to anyone
I
romantically?
Did. I definitely got close to a couple people.
Well, it can't be that close if there were a few of them, unless you guys had an arrangement.
4 months, yeah. Right. I mean, that's a thing, right? You can't really, I don't know. You don't really, nothing really hurt so much, so maybe it wasn't very close.
Yeah. You know? For you, you might have hurt them, no?
Yeah, that's possible. And I don't think so. But
do you think you're a good, sensitive guy?
Yeah.
you think you're like a considerate and sensitive guy to your romantic partners and to your friends?
Yeah, I think so, for sure. Mm-hmm. It's like something I...
Do you think men in general are inherently scumbags?
I don't know. I think anyone is a scumbag if they, like, have the privilege to be a scumbag.
Right.
I feel like I'm someone who has to be, like, pretty nice or something to, like...
you're saying you don't have the privilege to be a scumbag?
I don't think so, no.
I feel like any man really has the privilege to be a scumbag.
Yeah, but there's kind of... I don't know, man. I don't think that's true. I think certain people, like, they have, like, you know, the way they get around or something is by, like, through their relationships and stuff like that. And, like,
but a
lot of, like, who I am, like, is, like, through my community and, like, my peers and stuff like that. So
if you got a reputation for being, like, a bad dude or an inconsiderate dude, it would come back quite quickly.
I mean, I guess just because I'm a pretty social person or whatever.
Right.
So I'm, like, I'm out walking the streets. You know, like, I read at cafes. That's where I read books and stuff. So if I was, like, out and, like, seeing everyone and they hated me, I would be, like, I couldn't live my life, really.
Do you think it's cooler to read a book at a cafe than your phone?
I don't know. I guess it depends. I don't know.
I mean, like, reading...
Cooler's a weird spectrum, a weird metric, you know?
I think it's, like, pretty relevant, maybe. I mean, cool definitely fits in with the idea of someone quaintly reading a book, like a sort of outmoded form of, like, you know, getting into something and reflecting. I like it. I don't hate books, but I'm just saying the word cool doesn't seem that dissimilar from the image of someone reading at a cafe.
I mean, I think there's this rule, and I kind of think about it when I think about fashion, and it's really hard to look cool and to have fun at the same time.
Uh-huh, right.
You know, so...
Which one is reading? Having fun?
I think it's having fun. So
yeah. What are you reading right now?
At the moment, I've been reading a lot of Clarice Lispector.
Uh-huh.
She's this sort of Brazilian writer.
Fiction.
Fiction writer, yeah, yeah.
I think
she died in the mid-60s.
Uh-huh. And what's the vibe?
The vibe is kind of like sort of less... masculine
magic realism.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. No, it's
which, no, it's nice to have that because I think a lot of the voices, they're very in this genre well known, like, that, right. Not that they're just well known, but they sort of have this.
No, a lot of the voices freaky, that are well known are kind of macho.
Very macho.
Yeah, for
and,
sure. Or so we, although I guess like more often than not, they're macho. They are. Most famous,
and they come from like the 50s, so where it was like it was the time of the macho. I don't know. So there's this sort of this, she was
it's
kind
pre,
of
pre like sort of a, an awareness of like a kind of more. I don't know.
It was pre-masculine
attitudes of like late 60s.
Yeah. I mean, but I was watching a like Husbands the other day.
Right.
And
which is from 1970, but from 1970, feels like it's from 1963 or something.
Well, just the scene where he's like slapping this woman around and stuff like that and kind of
in the bar or in the hotel?
In the house.
Oh, his
wife.
Woman. Yeah,
his woman. And just kind of I don't know. I was thinking about how there might like what the masculine crisis is. There's sort of a lack of positive masculinity, you know? Masculinity is just like crisis.
The depiction of masculinity is...
The depiction and like the sort of discourse around it. Like the, you know, we're sort of going through a whatever.
Oh, you mean
of,
now?
Now, yeah.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, have you taken the red pill?
Just to get back to your earlier question, Tokyo is pretty Enter the Void.
Right. Okay, got it. So your experience there was sort of Enter the Void.
Yeah, totally. I just want to...
But you're still alive.
Yeah,
which is great. And we're so happy to have you.
Yeah.
Is that one of your favorite places that you've been? Or what was one of your favorite places that you've been? What is the... When you travel, it's an impulse or do you have a reason? Like, I have a hard time leaving the country unless I have, like, a reason, like, to be somewhere. Like, okay, I have, like, this job or I have, like, this opportunity or something.
I used to have reasons.
Right.
You know, and when I was in Tokyo, I was part of this residency.
Okay, that's a reason, yeah.
Called, it was, like, an artist residency in Tokyo.
Did you make stuff?
I did, yeah. Had an exhibition out there.
What kind of stuff do you make, Albie? Tell us.
At the moment, I'm sort of piercing these canvases with jewelry.
Uh-huh.
So I guess they're like paintings, and I've kind of been writing a lot about the ampersand.
They're paintings because the canvas is involved.
Yeah, I guess so. They're like flat wall works, I guess is what you can say.
What do you call that? There's a name for the movement. Right, in the 50s, where the man was slashing the canvases.
I don't know, I wasn't around.
No, but you know what that's called, right?
That was called... The
guy's name is like Falacci.
Lucio Fontana, he was part of a movement called Zero, but I don't know if that's what you're talking about.
I'm talking about that guy, and then they gave that like a name, but yeah.
Action painting, maybe?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Who knows?
I don't really...
You don't really care about that stuff, right?
Yeah, I never really learned about that.
Yeah.
That's kind of
it's
like...
It's sort of in your peripheral, but you're not really like looking to it.
When people, they always talk about Radiohead, like every motherfucker had like this like weird relationship to Radiohead.
I didn't care.
I never cared about Radiohead. Yeah. And people, it's like, yeah, and it's like not something that you should really reinvestigate.
Right. It's not
as you
it
get
makes
older.
No sense now. I tried when I was like 15. I tried to listen.
Yeah.
I always, as a younger child, like when I was 12 or 11, I was truly like affected by that music video, the animated one, you know, where the guy cuts his arms off and he's like naked and stuff. And I was like, wow, this is a weird, this is what they might call like strange. There's like a different world out there, but like it never really inspired me to like go deep. And then when I did, and then when I did go deep, I'm like, I think I like the Strokes way more than this.
Yeah
Can you feel that? Yeah,
I can feel that.
Okay, when you said earlier, let's get back to male crisis and something you said earlier. I asked you, like, if you feel like you're kind of, like, considerate or, like, loving or sensitive or whatever. I think I said considerate. Those other words are maybe more loaded, right? And but then earlier you had said, like, men are – people are going to be scummy if they have the privilege to be scummy.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Who do you think has the privilege to be scummy? Just, like, white guys?
people
who are insensitive?
Who has a privilege to be scummy? I mean, I think if you can just get by, if you can feel comfortable with being scummy.
Right. People
so
who are
like means,
oblivious or insensitive.
But I think, like, I think there's definitely something about being, like, a brown man.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're, like, a little bit scummy. It's just like a Persian motherfucker. It's like, the whatever the like stereotype is that this guy is gonna like
smarmy, is
smarmy,
maybe like a word,
cheat you out of like some money or something like that. So
but you don't look like you're not a Persian guy.
I'm not a Persian guy. I'm just.
What
like
do you think people think your ethnicity is?
I don't know. It's
you don't know.
It's really
it, across. It there varies.
Yeah, yeah.
Depending on the bias and the sort of stupidity of the person making the
no,
guess.
No, I don't think people expect. I don't really expect people to know where I'm from or anything
right.
like that. You know, I look pretty.
No, I mean, I'm interested in talking about that to like the extent that that.
No, but I mean, I wouldn't say that race is like the biggest factor in terms of like how you can be like the privilege to be scummy. But it does like it is a part of this conversation of like privilege and just where if you're acting a certain way that you're like. Like, I don't know, having to prove that you're not an idiot or something like that is something
uh-huh.
you grow up with. In at least that's the way it was in Los Angeles growing up. You'd have to like.
You felt like whatever designation as a person of color you were given, you had the onus to prove that you were intelligent.
Yeah, totally. Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly.
Whereas maybe an East Asian person would not have that onus. Is that
no? Maybe
like a
maybe
white
they would
guy
too.
Or wouldn't.
Yeah, I think yeah for sure. Like.
I mean, like, is that onus there because of certain cultural stereotypes, or is it there? Like, what in your empirical experience were you like, fuck, like, I need to assert myself as, like, you know.
Well, they're just, like, cultural references that, like, you're not privy to or something like that. If you mm-hmm. show that, like, you don't know what's going on, then they're just like, oh, this person just, like, what's wrong with them? They just don't know what's going on. They still don't know how the world works or something. You're like, yeah, I don't.
You felt like that was something you had to butt up against. Like, hear convos and references
yeah,
of stuff
sure.
that, like,
yeah.
because of what, your home life or because of
I mean, I just
the things you were
the
interested
difference
in.
And the confrontation of this difference and not really at that time understanding that it was just a difference as opposed to maybe I don't know, like an incorrect or correct way. You know, I think everyone's very.
But you're talking about specifically. You're talking about cultural. You're talking about like.
I mean, I'm talking about just like a way of being. You know, like if you
yeah.
walk into like a room, and it's all women.
Right.
You might be very.
Might not know the code. You might be
discomforting. And even if it's just you expect, you know, so it's just it's sort of that idea of being a minority. Maybe that's what it is. It's like you walk into a room where everyone seems to be. A part of this other thing that you're not, it's kind of like watching a conversation, a thread go down on Facebook and you think everyone is in on this
uh-huh.
thing and they're not, you know, but,
uh-huh. but you think they are. And
you think
in,
they
a,
are,
in,
yeah.
in a certain way, there is an exclusionary thing going on
right.
because of that assumption, a tacit exclusion, let's say. I don't know. I'm just curious about that. I mean, like that clearly is something that, that sort of privilege thing, being a man, like, right, is, like, something that's, like, in the air, right? Intersectionality, race,
well,
gender.
Well,
it's
like I don't think it is in the air. I don't think we really talk about masculinity right now. We talk about masculinity is always secondary to this discourse of the problem of patriarchy and or, like, feminism is, like, constantly looking at patriarchy without sort of
I mean,
it's a negative critique as opposed to.
Well, masculinity is part of the power structure, right? So theoretically,
I don't
right?
know. I don't know if that's true.
Well, patriarchy is part of the power
sure,
structure,
that's
right?
True. That's
and
true.
Like male identity, right?
Right. Well, this is where I think
patriarchy.
Like the you know the specifics get a little bit.
I don't want to get. We don't need to get into semantics. But like, I
no,
mean,
not
like,
getting into semantics, but I think there is something different that isn't necessarily patriarchal about feminine and masculine spirits. Like
mm-hmm.
those, that spectrum, I think, is like interesting to explore, and I don't think it necessarily has to do with the sort of like hegemonic structures
reaffirming a power structure.
Yeah, I think there's like a spiritual version of the sort of like gender.
Mm-hmm. Binary?
No, not the binaries, archetypes.
Uh-huh,
so uh-huh. these, like, spirits that are around
right.
and that those don't necessarily have to express themselves as part of a power pair, something could be very right.
I get it.
I think this is this thing that I'm sort of finding, but then you missing is that there's no masculine expression because they're afraid that an expression of masculinity it just only ties into a patriarchal like paradigm in this like liberal like bubble that you and I live in.
Sure, sure, sure. In the PC world that we live in. No, no, no. But I would say maybe something slightly problematic with that is that like you're looking at like, okay, certain characteristics or like qualities or something in this like weird binary, right? But like
I'm just looking for the 2016 mensch, Eugene.
Yeah, the Ubermensch.
Who's that? Who is that?
The Ubermensch. I don't know, but what I'm saying is, like, one could rhetorically could approach that idea similar to saying, like, oh, this person is such a Aries, or, like, this person is such, like, a Cancer, this person is such, like, Year of the Horse or something, you know what I mean? Like, Year of the Monkey.
I've been thinking a lot, and it's really not my place to talk about it, so I don't, but just in terms of, like, where we are in, like, gender identity and, like, a lot of, you know, I've been, like, thinking a lot about this. And
certainly you can talk about it because you think about it.
No, I think about it all the time. Yeah. But I'm just not going to, like, post my feelings about – I'm not going to make a status update about, like
– But you can certainly share with us here.
Yeah, of course. No. But just in terms of how we're defining these archetypes of gender in terms of how we relate to maybe – food culture right now?
Uh-huh. Food culture?
Food culture,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, let's hear. I'm curious.
Well.
How do we lay it down? How do we relate to food culture right now?
So I was thinking about this idea of, like, the tomato, that like the postmodern tomato or something.
Okay.
Maybe, like, the modern tomato is, like, this red.
Red.
Very plump.
Platonic.
Like, very, like tomato red even, you know? Like,
right, sure.
This sort of crimson cadmium.
You don't have to describe it. Yeah. Everyone sees it. Next.
With the, like, a deep green vine at the top.
Okay, got it. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And so so we would walk into the supermarket and we would search for this tomato.
Yeah. The ideal.
The ideal tomato. Right. And anything that didn't fit in that ideal
right.
would get left on the shelf, you know?
Yeah.
We wouldn't buy that tomato.
Or they've already thrown out 95%
yeah.
of the stuff doesn't look
or
like
they,
that.
They've already
plant,
grown.
In the farmer processing plant.
And on a genetic level, they've grown.
70% of what
ideal.
They grow looks like that. The other 30% doesn't. They just toss 25% of that.
Right.
Just because it doesn't look right. It tastes
doesn't
exactly
right.
the same. It
might taste exactly the same.
Yeah.
Or it might taste slightly different. And like those
and that could
personalities
be
could be
sure.
interesting. And so, but we've moved on to this, like, other idea of, like, the tomato, like, the heirloom tomato.
Right.
Which is, like, somehow more real in its
yeah,
diversity.
It feels more raw, like, a little bit like
well,
a
yeah.
throwback. It's
yeah,
like
let's
before
find.
Everything got fucked.
Yeah, let's find the diversity inside of, like, because, you know, this diversity is expressing its entire genetic history.
Mm-hmm. Multiculti.
Multiculti, yeah. Mm-hmm. But beyond multiculti, just, like, actual expressions of a genetic history that span the spectrum, and each generation can exhibit these qualities.
Right.
So you have this one vine, and it might be, like, a kind of greenish tomato, like a yellow tomato, a red tomato.
Yeah.
And so now we're searching for that tomato without idealizing or essentializing the tomato-iest tomato.
Even though, like, the insidious thing about that is that even those, like, 30 to 40% of those are going to be thrown out because they don't look like the right area.
I don't think that's true.
You don't think so?
I don't think that's true. Huh. I think what we're accepting is, like, spectrum tomato.
Yeah.
And that we're
a heterogeneity. We're down with that.
Totally. And we're accepting a diverser expression of tomato spirit.
Yeah.
And I think this is sort of what we're dealing with in – but we also are searching for 100% organic, real tomato.
Yeah.
But we want – so this is what I'm interested in, in this, like, sort of – this reinvestigation of materialism.
Yeah.
That is – because for a long time, you know, we I think we both went to college at the tail end of this. It's like people were – just the whole line is that everything is, like, socially determined, value socially determined, right? But now we're – like, we've crossed that threshold in food culture at least, and we're looking at tomatoes with, like, at realness but also with a diversity of realness.
Well – here's what I would say, and you've actually touched on something that, like, interests me a lot, and the tail end of what you were saying, how, yeah, we're looking for this, like, heterogeneity, we're looking for this diversity, and we accept that, and actually we're embracing it now in, like, this really, like, way, like, where we see the value of a lack of conformity, or whatever, you know, and you could be critical of that as a thing, like, everyone being, like, unique or like not the same, but like they end up being the same. But what I would say is more interesting is the idea of 100% organic, mm-hmm. right? The idea of real, authentic, like is so, especially in the last, I would say 5 years, but really in the last 15 years, has morphed into such a fabricated thing because authenticity is so intertwined with brand, your personal identity and brand now, that they actually are a whole set of signifiers for what it means to be authentic, for what it means to be real, right? And those signifiers like put the idea of authenticity into like a really fake place. Like, everyone knows, like, what it means to reveal yourself. I mean, reality television and social media create this paradigm where we're operating under a set of signifiers that we all know what it means to be real or raw or organic. And actually, to me, what seems now, like, in the last year, what's become so much more real to me is, like, fake, like, fan fiction, like, clone zone. Like, people you could get deeper into someone's actual identity, in my opinion, if you see where they're making shit up. Rather than like when they present their very curated lives full of right. signifiers of the
real. Well, I think what you're talking about is representations of desires, desires for what they desire to be real, expressions of desire. It's like there's realness, which is like what you project, and
right.
there's reality, which is what we all share.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much 100% of the time, your realness doesn't align with reality.
But don't you think that, okay, like we can get
and
into
so I think, I think what you're mm-hmm. saying is that why you think something is fake is so real is because you can understand its fakeness. You can understand. It becomes clear what the motivations are to behave a certain way.
Yes.
Because you understand the motivations and the desires to express.
Through the fakeness. Reality
expression of their
it's a manifestation
realness.
Of their actual desires, exactly, as opposed to something which is a projection of how people want to conform to the signifiers of the reality that we all understand. I would say, though, that like more and more what you would call, or maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe like what you were referring to as like the reality that we are all share is like pretty much in flux now, because there is like such a virtual like understanding of what real is, like, you know, like we live through our, like, I mean, you're taking a picture of me right now, like, you know, in a certain way we mediate, and that's like such a buzzword, but we mediate like what is going on in our lives through our phones, through technology, through social media. So the idea that there's like, oh, this reality that like we don't really acknowledge but we know we're all in it is bullshit. Like, because it gets morphed and twisted through how we experience it.
I guess the reason why I've been thinking about this through food culture.
Yeah.
Because
you eat it.
and in, like, gender studies is
yeah.
because, like, maybe – so there is this desire, at least, for 100%, like, authentic, organic,
right.
whatever, real tomato.
Yeah.
But I don't think we could feel very comfortable – and this is, like, a very liberal sort of project.
Got it.
That's happened for the past couple of years or something. And if you transfer that same...
Organic is a liberal
yeah,
project.
Yeah,
yeah,
if
for
we,
sure. For
if
sure.
we... or like 100% like cotton or like just whatever. Real materials like
uh-huh.
artisanal.
Yeah, yeah.
All Brooklyn.
Yeah. Got it.
Hashtag. So if we move that to like, I think, like...
Gender,
it becomes very uncomfortable. But then maybe if we think about the same desire for the heirloom and the diversity, the spectrum
then
tomato, then it becomes like
more understandable,
right?
As an
so
analog.
Then we also can maybe reinvestigate like materialism, like what, you know, physical attributes define this or that, and then we could place it on the spectrum, and it becomes like more. Then we could think about the spirituality, you know, on top of that, and not separate of, but an aspect, or maybe separate of the spiritual, like gender versus like the physical gender, and like these sort of,
yeah.
And it doesn't, and we could sort of find these expressions, and they don't have to be so, because I think it's very uncomfortable. People like are very uncomfortable with like defining femininity or defining masculinity at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. In terms of like a pure gender, or like whatever,
right.
Physical traits are.
Yeah.
I would say more.
But heirloom gender is what I'm advocating.
and I think that's a good thing to push for, and I think that's where we're at. more or less, at least within our social value circle or whatever, you know, right. There's like a general embrace of that. But I would say, like, in terms of like the, I guess, conflict between the spiritual gender identity versus, like, let's say a physical one or something, like biological, right? I mean, like, we yield, and I think basically since the Enlightenment, we have yielded our concept of identity to basically someone's mind, right? So if someone can explicitly and authentically convince, you know, people of what their identity is, whether it that has to do with gender or, you know, something else, I think we yield to them. Like, you know,
I think there's certain narratives that we've, like, grown accustomed. We can either allow them or we can assume, like, that our relationship to them is static or that we've understood something. But if we're talking about something like Enlightenment, like, a big part of that might have been, like, Darwin or something, right?
Well, that's like 250 years later, but I guess specifically I'm thinking.
But
of like
he's a part of this same like lineage,
yeah,
in terms
sure.
of like let's have like,
Western humanism.
We're discovering
sure.
things, and then yeah. once we discover,
we integrate them into our philosophical value system or something.
And there's sort of a lineage, and like that there's like these certain people that develop these ideas, and they're individual people, you know.
Whatever, it's a whole groundwork of
right.
concepts. I guess actually I take
their ideas are attributed to individuals in Western thought, like philosophy.
Yes,
like that's
sure.
like a big deal.
Yes.
You know, statues and stuff. But I was just thinking that in terms of like how we even like deal with the narrative that we're familiar with and how we can like reinvent this narrative. Like there's this whole, and you know, oftentimes these two schools of thought are contemporary with one another.
Which
and,
schools?
And one, well, I'm just saying anything. And one, like, and one narrative triumphs over the other, and that's sort of what becomes the historical memory. And then
do they triumph or do they conflict and create a new narrative, a la, like, I think they call that the dialect.
Well, there's like the negative dialect where it reveals that there's not really an inherent truth in any
right.
of those things.
Well, yeah, history isn't really moving towards some grand
right.
revelation.
I'm just
right?
talking about historical memory and how, like, you know, how we remember something just
right.
changes how the world
sure.
was invented.
Sure, print the legend, like,
yeah.
Well, the winner controls history.
Specifically about,
yeah, what we're thinking about.
This story that we all, like, learned in, I don't know, when we learned this, biology or something, that there's these, like, finches, Darwin's finches,
uh-huh.
on the island.
Right.
And he sees these finches, and some finches have long beaks, and some of them have short beaks.
Uh-huh.
And so they eat these nuts, and then on certain seasons, there would be this sort of, like, proliferation of these birds with these longer beaks, because the trees, like the nuts that grew on those trees, were like longer, and they needed these longer beaks to get to them.
Right, and the short beaked one couldn't.
Right, and so these populations of these
fluctuate
traits would fluctuate based on these trees, and it was his sort of way of defining
natural,
like,
selection,
natural selection, and how an ecosystem works.
Right,
and then there's this other guy, I think is a French guy. What was his name? Well, he was a Bakhtin. No. He was another scientist, and he was so that's how, like, we talk about social Darwinism, like survival of the fittest, right? Is like that's the Finch story,
right?
And so that leads.
I don't
sort
think
of
we talk too much about social Darwinism anymore, but yeah,
no.
Like,
but
that
sort of
like
that leads
basis.
Into capitalism. That's sort of like
yeah,
how
sure.
things
how
are
we
structured.
Justify, yeah,
right.
A certain capitalism.
Well, it's how you
sure.
know. And then this other man,
we'll just take it a French guy.
He talks about it as being that these traits actually wouldn't. Be passed down to the next generation, like the short beaks or the long beaks, in when those traits weren't popular, if people didn't collaborate. And his whole thing was like anarchism and community,
right?
And so that it was not competition but cooperation was the only way for a species to like
survive.
Yeah, to survive.
Yeah.
And so those are just two, like, social readings of, like, a natural phenomenon.
You're saying they're driven by the biases and sort of, like, value systems that they're coming from, and they, like, reach the conclusions they want to reach because they're informed by certain value
yeah,
systems.
Yeah, yeah.
So we shouldn't, like,
I'm just saying that once
scientists,
I don't know if we should.
Us.
It doesn't matter
global
what.
Warming, for instance.
It doesn't matter what we
scientists.
Accept. It just, it matter. This, that narrative just creates the world that we live in, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what I was saying before. I think that's kind of where we were at before, where I was saying, like, look, like, the idea, like, we all want something that feels organic and authentic, but right. actually, like, no one wants to, like, accept the fact that, like, all of those ways of presenting that are presentations in and of themselves. Like, you know, right. people don't want to think about the fact that, like, they, every day they wake up and they perform. Like, more so than ever, I would contend.
Right, but then we're moving towards performativity as reality.
Yes. So, and then does that recalibrate what it is to be authentic?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Like, I think that's what we're coming to terms with. You know, like, my favorite quote is – one of my favorite quotes, RuPaul, you're born naked and the rest of your life is drag.
Right. There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, I was like, when I think about that, I think, like, potentially – other societies that function like that, like, the closest analog I can think of is, like, totalitarianism, right? Where you're basically living in a state where, like, you know that if you say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing, you probably will be punished. You could die, right? So, like, you know, performance of a certain kind becomes the new reality.
Right, but living in a totalitarian state, you don't know how to be creative enough to think outside of not performing the way you're supposed to perform.
And I would say that 90 to 98% of people now aren't creative enough to, like, think about performing outside of, like, the reality of realness that's presented to them and, like, the modes in which to access that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the
truth sets you free, right?
I don't know what the truth is. It's
but the truth also doesn't help you.
What is the truth? It seems very complicated.
That you are an infinite being full of abundance and love.
Do you believe that? You're laughing. Do you believe that? You have a certain spirituality?
Yeah, I guess so. I'm kind of one of those...
if God talks to you personally, you'll believe
him. Yeah, maybe. No, I would be very scared
do
if God talked to me.
Do you do the thing called meditating?
I meditate every now and then. I don't have a really
you're not regular.
Consistent practice, no.
Yeah. Well, do you do anything, quote-unquote, athletic?
I skate.
Right, yeah.
You skating.
What are some moves that you're working on?
I don't know. I just try to make myself laugh, you know?
Is that right?
Yeah.
I saw a great skate video that was all about the laughter. I don't remember what it was called. But they were breaking boards in the
oh,
middle.
Oh, right, yeah. That was on a... I think
and they were...
On the homie Young Jake's network, Adult Swim.
Yeah, uh-huh. That's mm-hmm. the one. That's yeah. the one I'm thinking of.
That's the one.
Those guys really made me laugh, but also themselves.
Yeah, it's yeah. It's
and that was, like, you know, people taking the accepted reality of how to make a skate video and then subverting it, undercutting it, adding, like, some flair in a way where, like, you have a certain amount of assumptions watching those things and making those things,
yeah.
and then, like, they completely undercut those assumptions.
Heirloom skate vid.
Is that what, exactly. There you go. Heirloom skate vid.
Heirloom skateboards.
So what are you working on now?
I just got a studio next
right,
door.
Where is it at?
I'm taking over Noon Spot.
Oh,
so.
There you go.
Yeah.
So you were already here.
No, I was, you know, I'm giving her some space
the
to move out.
The studio is here at K-Chung Radio.
Studio and studio.
Can you believe it? This I know you believe that this radio network is a huge megalithic empire, but in fact, this is one room contained in a larger space. It's also shared with artists.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just. I was gonna leave town to make a movie in Cambodia.
What kind of movie is that?
It's a documentary about a building
uh-huh.
In Phnom Penh, which is the capital, and the building was.
That's where your family's from, Cambodia.
My family's from Cambodia.
You speak Cambodian?
I speak Khmer. Is the
my
the language there. Yeah, so it was this building that it was my dad's high school, and he went to high school there.
Uh-huh.
Then it became a like an army base. Then it became a prison. Then now it's a museum. And so I was sort of working on this sort of like structuralist kind of portrait of the building.
It's a museum that acknowledges like the horror that took place there.
Exactly, yeah. And so I was
thinking about how, did your parents escape?
Yes, that's yeah. They definitely escaped
just in time.
My parents are refugees, so they.
I am too. Did you know that?
Yeah, nice.
I am a refugee of this country.
Yeah.
You were born here.
Dream. I was born here. Were you born here, Eugene?
No, I was born in the Ukraine.
Oh, word.
Soviet Union, they called it back then.
Yeah.
When did they escape? In like 72 or something?
They No, they were like they went through the horror. They were there. They met in that, and then they like got out.
They met in the state, not in like a camp
Met at camp, and
wow.
No, I mean like that's a thing. It's like there's this saying that kind of means I don't know how to say it exactly, but it's kind of just it's you kind of get used to anything. That's kind of how it goes.
You're saying this is a idiomatic Cambodian.
This is just
expression?
Something that they say. It's like yeah, well you know. It's just like anything else, and it's just that you know life happens. Like people still get through it.
Figure out a way.
In any case, yeah, they like you know got
as long
out.
As they stay alive.
Yeah,
that's great. That's incredible.
It's a funny thing. Yeah, but
I mean it's incredible that they escaped and made it here.
Right? Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. It's a very funny thing.
Lucky for you. What with you being alive?
I don't know, man. Or am I like the bad luck charm? You know, like.
Do you think your family's proud of you, or do you think they're think you're a fuck up or something?
I don't know. I think I have my parents are pretty proud of me.
They are?
Yeah.
Okay. How often do you talk to them?
Pretty often.
Like 3 or 4 times a week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would say that. Yeah.
And do you just tell them like?
But sometimes it'll be like 1 time a week or something like that. But at least once a week, have dinner with them every Sunday.
Oh, that's cool because they live around here, Long Beach.
Yeah, they live in Long Beach, right? So.
And then are you pretty open with them? Like, can you tell them like stuff that's going on in your life, or is it kind of like you hold back a lot of stuff?
I mean, I don't think you really have the sort of like openings to get deep with people constantly. And if you did, it would be a pretty draining relationship.
People, you mean parents?
Parents, but just anyone. So, yeah, we get deep, but, like, it's not, like, a constantly deep.
No, I don't mean that. I mean, you tell them shit that's going on in your life. Like, context to care?
They do have the context to care. I think they have this sort of, there's a lot of, like, pride or something in, like, having a kid in the States or something like that. I kind of sense or something. They're just like excited to like hear about what I'm up to, and because it's kind of like they're up to it too.
Yeah, they're living sort of vicariously through you in a way, but you have to be kind of good at explaining it. So you're down to explain.
I'm definitely down to explain. You know, just be like, Mom, this is why this is a big deal. This is a crazy picture. My mom learned the word bigot today.
Wow. Are your parents in any way, do they have opinions about the American political system?
Yeah, they have so many opinions.
Are they like
Look,
liberals
my
or
mom
conservatives?
Wrote this down.
Bigot. Yeah, bigot. Yeah. She's like, what is that?
What is that?
Did you tell her or she looked it up?
I kind of talked to her about it.
Are they on the political spectrum? Are they liberal or conservative?
I guess they're like incredibly liberal.
Okay. Got it. Yeah.
But they have like a different, I'm sure your parents have a different idea of like what communism means or something.
Yeah, they hate it.
Right, they hate, but they don't actually hate social. I don't know. It's like a weird thing.
Yeah, they don't hate social. They hate communism. Right. But for that reason, my parents are extremely conservative. They're like,
but isn't like ultimate conservative? Yeah, it's so weird. Man.
It is weird. But I would say most Russian Jewish immigrants who went anywhere. America, South Africa, Israel. I would say most of the problems in Israel now probably have to do with like a lot of the Russian Jews there.
Yeah.
They're evil, bad.
They're mean.
They're mean.
I went to Moscow.
You did?
Yeah.
They were probably fucked to you.
I got robbed by a taxi driver.
Of course.
I was trying to go see. I was trying to go to a rave outside of Moscow.
I'm sure the kids who are like our age, who like maybe you became friendly with, were like okay to you, but by and large the culture was like extremely negative.
You could really feel the hatred.
Hateful. Yeah.
Have you ever been to Moscow?
Never. I've never been back.
They have these escalators that take probably like 3 minutes. No kidding. Just 3 solid minutes going down this deep escalator.
Wow.
And it's so deep to the subway.
Does it pop your ears or something?
It's just so gnarly, and you're just so deep down in there. And the reason why it's so deep is because they're all afraid of the bomb.
Well, they were. Like when they built it, it was like the nuclear.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
would you say that's like the.
So the thing is, you're going down for 3 minutes and you're seeing just all these faces just like.
Looking at you like you're dark.
Fucking glaring at you.
Like
it's
you
crazy.
We hate you.
It's wild.
Is it the most inhospitable place you've been in the world, do you think?
It's the furthest from home I've ever felt.
Uh-huh. You felt like really an alien. But like one that they wanted to murder.
Because there's a lot of these like long. Pedestrian tunnels.
Yeah.
And it's just, fuck, I can't believe I'm going to have to walk down this dark thing.
A little bit scary. Scary.
It's very scary. And these guys just, like, stare at you, and it's terrifying, you know?
Yeah, I definitely Russian people seem so evil, like the most evil people in the world to me. Like,
I don't know if I could say evil, but there was a sort of, they've been through some shit and they're too busy worrying about what they've been through.
Yeah,
I
think
to be considerate of what you're going
through.
They're
historically inhospitable to everyone except for like the French. They've always fetishized the French. Well, America in a way too, like value, like capitalist values, but historically the French. So now that you're here, you're going to work on other stuff. Okay, so the movie didn't work out. Why?
I just lost some funding. And
where were you going to get it from? A grant?
I did. I won a grant about like this time last year.
That's cool.
It wasn't for that much money. It was like for $2,500.
Right, not enough.
And then I had like I was working full time here in LA.
You working?
I was in a creative direction like output for this like textiles company that produces a lot of stuff in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like my first time having a full time job. And then
like paid okay.
Yeah, I didn't have benefits, but it paid pretty good.
How long did you do that for? A year?
No, like maybe like 6 months, 7 months.
And then you're like, did you quit because you're going to have enough money to go back to my work?
It just didn't work out. It just didn't work out. And so I was like, okay, I need to make art and get this whole thing together. But anyway, I ended up using that grant money to like live off of while I like was getting resituated.
You didn't save up from your full-time job?
Didn't save. It's hard, you know, like I was drinking two kombuchas,
right, exactly.
Two juices. Like, that's like $30 a day right
when
there.
When you're done with $80 right, juices in LA, when you're done with work, you're like, I'm fucking tired. Like, I don't want to work on art. I want to like buy myself a nice dinner.
That's what I did,
and maybe
man.
Like go out and like party with my friends. Yeah, and then maybe. You just turn into like a yucky. They call that a yucky.
A yucky.
Yeah, and you just turn into kind of like a worthless yucky. And if you did have some interesting conceptual art, subversive, revolutionary, redemptive thing inside of you, it just fades away. It just becomes nothing.
I mean, I just don't think you have. Yeah, you just don't even have the time, you know. And the only way,
I think it's more an energy thing, don't you think?
Energy.
You were working what, tops 10 to 11 hours a day, tops.
Tops, yeah.
You're working 8.5.
But that's crazy, man.
Yeah, I know, man. I've worked those jobs.
And it was this. I was confronted with like infinity. There was never like these projects. There's like these long term projects
that you're constantly started working
and
with.
Just, yeah, there's
but
it's
you
just
quit,
endless.
Right? You left, or did they like say you're bad?
It was they kind of stopped the whole entire creative like project.
They're like, actually, we don't need to do this. Like we're
it was
textiles. We just provide textiles.
Yeah. It was a complicated ending. But
so you lived off the grant, and then you're like, hey, I don't have money to go make the movie.
Right. Well, yeah. It just other things came up, and like I didn't have enough to be there comfortably, and like rent the right cameras and get the crew going.
Yeah.
And
but you could potentially make the movie like, a few years from now. It's not like, is this a moment when like. The movie needs to
there
exist.
Were certain exhibitions and certain curators that were interested in this film and that I was hoping
I
to get them to make it. I haven't, really. Yeah, it's just like a tricky thing.
So that's so you're not. That's probably not going to happen. So you're doing this. You're going.
Well,
be
no,
like,
I mean, yeah, that's sort of the dance that you're always playing as like a
project
artist because you're always like trying to get money to do something.
Yeah.
And
I've never done that, applied for a grant or anything. For some reason, I think it's like evil, but I know it's like not. It's like you have a legitimate idea. You need
maybe
to
this
fund
is.
It.
I got how do you ask people for money, Eugene? This is like what you.
How do I?
Yeah, it's what you do, right?
I like am delusional and also confident that the thing that I'm making, and you know, like you probably make more projects than me. I would say any fine artist makes a lot more projects than me. I'm a filmmaker, right? So I make a few things. Every few years is how it goes. I have the delusion and confidence to think that the thing I'm making is entertaining, and I would hope entertaining enough that a large swath of people would be interested in seeing it and potentially pay money to see it.
That's the important part of what you do. It's like entertaining, and I don't think
that is important to me.
Yeah, I don't think like a lot of like artists, I don't think they don't think they're going to entertain anyone, you know? That's kind of like the heart. That's why grants are necessary.
I do think that if you are engaging with an idea, you want to communicate that to other people to engage with them about that idea. Like you're part of a historical discourse or you're part of a cultural discourse, right? Either way, you do feel like you're engaging in something. And to me, like that's all entertainment is, but like, you know, there's a different set of parameters for cinema, for movies than there is for fine art, you know. But either way, you're going to try to engage an audience, right? You're not making something in a vacuum. You're doing something because you think it has value, either, again, like I said, historically or culturally. So I think you do have to have the confidence, whether you're an artist in your studio or whether you're trying to make, like, fucking blockbuster movie, that, you know, you're going to engage people. And that's what I mean by entertainment.
Like the Jam?
The band, that's entertainment. Mm-hmm. Or, but you know what that comes from? That comes from all these documentaries in the 60s and 70s about the golden age of Hollywood. And that was like a big song in Sing in the Rain, I believe, called That's Entertainment. Or that's called Make 'em Laugh. But there's like another song in a musical called That's Entertainment. That's, I think, entertainment. We're coming to the end of the show, Al.
We are.
Who's next?
Quintus?
Oh, yeah, Notes is next. Okay, Notes is here. So, Albie, I've had such a great time. It's gone by so fast.
Yeah, it has.
Right, hasn't it? So we usually play a game at the end of the show. Mm-hmm. So we're going to play a game. I'm going to throw out three numbers at you, and you're going to pick one, okay?
All right.
All right. 7, 20, or 11.
Ooh. 7.
Okay, that's the most boring one. No, it's okay. It's okay. 7 weeks from now. Uh-huh. What? And that we're talking about the end of April. What is the perfect Albie Samarth day? 7 weeks from today. What's the perfect Albie experience?
This little music festival called Coachella. I'll be in some cutoffs.
No, you're gonna be at Coachella. You're going to Coachella.
I don't know. It depends. No, you know, I fuck. You know,
do you like stuff like that? Music fests.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. What do you like about it?
I mean, I like getting treated well at one of those things. I wouldn't right. just go.
You want to go as a VIP.
Yeah, that's like ideal.
With the wristbands,
like meeting Kanye, like talking to, you know, smoking some weed with Paris Hilton.
Have you hung
like
out
that.
With Kanye?
No, not yet.
Have you heard his new album?
Yes.
I think it's really good.
I think it's really good.
It's as good as Yeezus, which is also a really good album. Okay, so be real. Is that really where you'd be 7 weeks from now? Like cut off jean shorts.
Yeah, I don't know. Hopefully, like I want to. I don't know. I'm still debating whether or not to stick around in Los Angeles.
But you have the studio, but you can just.
I have
drop
the studio.
It.
It's like month to month.
Month
know.
To month. So you could.
There's
go to
there's enough people who want the studio. Yeah, like who knows? April. I do love a good summer in LA.
Yeah.
It's real nice. It kind of feels like summer right now.
It made me
feel so nostalgic. That smell.
So, yeah.
You could feel the fun, like, almost.
It does motivate me, too. In New York, May and June always motivated me, like, do a
right.
big project.
Do a big
Here
project.
It starts in, like, February.
Right. Summer 16.
But that's good for a movie, because by May, that's when you're shooting, if you start thinking, start really prepping
yeah.
in February.
Yeah.
Well, I hope wherever you are. That's come on. That's a really indeterminate answer. So,
oh, I'm sorry.
No, give
like
my
biggest
imagine,
fantasy about
close
April.
Your eyes.
I mean,
you're not closing your eyes.
In April,
just actualize it.
I don't know.
April 22nd.
That's tough. I can't imagine. I'm just like walking.
You
I'm,
still just
I'm
see
walking
in cut off jean shorts.
No, I've actually found myself like walking in a park in like Echo Park. It sounds
wow.
nice. I don't know.
That does sound nice.
A little hike.
Or by yourself or with someone?
I was with someone.
In Elysian Park or in Echo Park?
Yeah, in Elysian Park.
Mm-hmm. And do you see any dogs?
No, I wasn't
seeing
any dogs.
Low rider cars?
No. Oh, that'd be nice. Go on a Sunday.
Who are you with?
Just someone real special. Be good.
But you don't know who it is.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that materializes for you with a specific person.
Thanks.
Thank you for being on the show, Albie.
Thank you, Eugene. That's
yeah,
fun.
This has been Open Up and Bleed. I'm just going to say this. Please support your man, Mr. Bernie Sanders. We didn't talk politics. I really wanted to, but I'm glad we talked about personal stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway. We have this K-Chung Radio. We have Notes coming up next on this Super, the Tuesday, March 1st. Tune in next week when actually we have a Hollywood writer, Hollywood sort of a lifestyle and cultural columnist, Nigel Smith, coming here. Okay, so tune in next week. And other than that, thanks for listening. This is Open Up and Bleed. Bye.